Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Where he goes, oh, when I get in this formation, they like to play these defenses. Well, I'm going to get in the lab with a pen and a pad and try to get this damn label off, okay? That was Dr. Dre, just in case you wanted to know. But he's going to guess it was. Oh, yeah. What up, mofos? How you doing? What's up?
Happening,
Ahmed Farid, Chris Sims right here.
I feel.
Did you know that line I used? Getting the lab with the pen and a pad, trying to get this damn label off?
I look back at
They're saying
life.
Dre fell off?
No, I didn't know it.
Damn you.
I didn't know that. I don't know movie references.
Right.
I look back at my life and I wonder, like, what did I do?
I don't know. Honestly. I'm really confused. I don't know what you did. I mean, you've lost culture in America. Has gone by you. I don't know.
I was watching a lot of TV,
right.
A lot of sports.
Okay.
But I don't have a good memory, and so I don't remember a whole lot of that either.
Yes, yes. Well, either way, that was
Dr. Dre
reference, yes. And
forgot about Dre.
Yeah, so look at you.
Right?
Yeah, you're all over it.
I do know. Thank you, Pete.
And I was talking about my friend there, I believe, Kyle Shanahan, I think.
Yeah.
That was Thursday, which is 4 days ago. Oh, it was Frank Reich. Damn it.
But
it'll hold true to Kyle Shanahan as we get into that as well.
You will echo those sentiments once again.
Yes.
Yeah,
so. We got deep dive stuff coming in.
We do. So this is our Monday tradition, right? We're going to touch on every game.
Yep.
So every game we'll get a comment, whether it be one sentence or 35.
Could just be your team sucks and we move on, but we're going to get a comment.
We'll talk about every game. We will go deep diving into two of them. You guys picked on Twitter the two that you wanted Chris to look at game film of. Number one was 49ers-Panthers.
Yep.
Number two we'll do a little bit later on is Packers-Chiefs, which we saw on Sunday Night Football, which we were kind of bummed that it wasn't going to be Brady and Rodgers and Mahomes.
Get your shit straight over here.
But it turned out to be Rodgers and Moore,
right?
Which was still pretty good.
Sounds good. Sounds like a law firm, but either way, it was good. I thought it was a very exciting game. And we'll get into that. There's some interesting things, I think, particularly for both teams, but more for the Chiefs. Mm. You know, the Chiefs, within the loss, I'm encouraged with things I saw, and we'll get into that.
Okay.
But either way, I was impressed with the way they played last night, and, of course, Aaron Rodgers was phenomenal as well.
So before we get into Panthers and 49ers, let's do a couple give me the headlines here.
Okay.
So, well, let's start with Saints, who improved to 7-1.
Yeah.
Beat the Cardinals 31-9. The headline I picked for this one, I didn't go with breeze. I didn't go with the breeze.
How
headline.
Dare you? I mean, you were supposed to go, it's a breeze.
I know, right? And
with breeze.
It was, right? 373 yards, 3 touchdowns for him.
I'm excited for your headlines, though. What are
but
they?
I went with Latavius Murray spooks Cardinals with Kamara costume.
Oh.
So I think a good Drew Brees was helped
deep
by
headline.
By a good Latavius Murray. Who ran for 102 yards, 21 carries, a touchdown, had 9 catches, 12 targets for Latavius Murray.
So amazing.
Drew Brees went in there and was like, Alvin, let's do this. He's like, no, I'm not him right now. It's like, oh, whatever. Threw it to him 12 times. That was the most targets that Latavius Murray has ever had in his career. His previous high was 7. So he was good, but yes. It was a breeze for Drew Brees coming back. He looked sharp.
Yeah, he looked sharp. I mean, it's amazing. I said this on PFT this morning. I mean, I don't care who you are, Brees, Manning, Elway, Montana. I mean, you miss 5 or 6 weeks. You know, I expect you to look a little rusty. It just looked like the same old Drew Brees. Like he hadn't missed a beat. really. And, you know, to what you're saying, I mean, again, it just shows the, you know, the Saints are, they're not a one-trick pony. They're just not. It doesn't matter who's in or out of the lineup. Sean Payton is where it starts, and his great play design and the toughness he instills in the football team. And, you know, oh, okay, he's the master of the short passing game, as we know Sean Payton. So, hey, look at Latavius Murray get involved. Oh, my quarterback, he's getting back in the swing of things. Let's get him a lot of completions, you know, 10 yards and under early on. He does that. And then as the game goes, you know, they start to get more and more aggressive. But, yeah, Drew was phenomenal. Michael Thomas is phenomenal. Latavius Murray is phenomenal. And the Cardinals going for it down 10-6 on their own 29-yard line.
Yeah.
That was the changing point of the game. I mean, it really was. Cardinals got an interception.
Yeah.
They get the ball. Now it's 3rd-and-1. They don't get the first. 4th-and-1. They run it up the middle against a Saints D that
bad
I know we talked about. Bad play call, right. Just bad play call against truly the strength of the other team. And maybe the greatest strength of any D-line in football. I mean, they're that, you've heard me say, their run defensive line, run-stopping defensive line, is as good as it gets. But it really was never the same from that point on.
And you were really hard with Mike. I was listening to you guys talk about. You were really hard on Cliff for going for that. I'm hard on the play call.
Yeah.
It's a bad play call. I'm not as hard for them going for it. Yeah, it was your own 30. It doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I know.
And I know you look at it, oh, is this just a pure numbers play? And he's looking at the analytics.
Right.
The analytics say, oh, you should go for it there. It's a toss-up. I do think it sends a message to your offense that's positive.
It does.
As well, it's
it
like,
does.
I think that you can get it, even with a bad play call.
No.
Think you can get the the 1 yard. So I do think there are certain parts of it where, yeah, it didn't work out. And so if he could do it again, he probably would pick a different player, not do it at all. But I think that there's something to be said about having faith in your offense.
No, I don't disagree with you there. And, you know, it's funny you're bringing this up because I know I kind of went hard on that today on the show.
Both of you guys were.
I wasn't necessarily going hard on Cliff Kingsbury. Like, listen, I don't agree with the decision. His defense was doing well. The game was still in balance. Yeah, obviously the Saints were the better team. And really, listen, if he's closer to midfield, maybe I don't have an issue with it. My issue was not necessarily where I got into it. It's the analytics thing all the time. The analytics said it was a good call. The analytics were a good call. Well, yeah, okay, the numbers are a good call, but what about being there right now in the moment, and you're not necessarily known for being, like, the best running offense in football, and they are known for being one of the best run defenses in football, and you're going to run it up the middle and do that. That's where I just was like, you know, analytics are great, but it just doesn't always tell the whole story. And, of course, the human aspect comes into it sometimes where the analytics can't take that into account. Oh, this week, you know, we are outmatched in this area. The analytics say to do this, but we are physically outmatched with our human beings in this matchup, so I don't give a shit what the analytics say. But it's the new era we're in. That's why I kind of went hard. It wasn't necessarily on Cliff Kingsbury.
You do make a good point, too, because I'm a baseball guy, and analytics have taken over baseball.
Yeah.
And every GM now is basically a data scientist and not a scouting director. But there was a team, I don't remember if it was the Yankees or the Dodgers, but a very analytical team abandoned a certain set of their analytics this year because they felt like they were not accounting for enough variables. They felt like the data was wrong.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's easy to look at math if you only have a couple variables, but you're right. You got human beings out there, and you got so many variables that really you could not quantify.
No,
what the percent chances
exactly.
of gaining it here with all the different variables.
So. Exactly.
A little bit of give and take both sides.
Yep.
How about
Saints are awesome.
Before
though.
We get to the undefeated 49ers, let's do the undefeated New England Patriots. And my headline, they beat the Browns.
Yep.
The Browns now fall to 2-5, 27-13. My headline for 8th week in a row, Patsy loses to Pats. So that it seems like they don't ever play anyone. The New England Patriots. I mean, the way they play is a big reason
I didn't get
why.
It at first. I got you now.
The Patsies lose to the Pats.
Yes.
So, but I was looking at there are 14 total wins by all Patriots opponents this year. That averages out to less than 2 wins per team they have played this year. The schedule obviously has been, they don't play in a very strong division. The schedule has been easy. They take on a Browns team that we thought maybe was going to be good, and they're turning out that they're not very good. And so the dominance continues for the Patriots, although I don't know that we know anything more about them this week than we did last week.
No, I do still think there's questions. I mean, we know they're the Patriots. They're really good. They're phenomenal. They're still the best team in the AFC. I don't care what their schedule is. You're right, they haven't really been tested. Yesterday was one of those days where I think they could have been tested. I do think the Browns showed, you know, in my headline, like, no Believeland yet. I mean, I just don't believe in them because I feel like the Browns are, no, you guys will find a way to screw this up, I'm pretty sure. You know, and,
well, they had three turnovers in three straight plays.
In three straight plays, right. And you know, again, I think they showed that their defense was good enough to slow down the pass attack. You know, they showed the ability to run the football at times. But, you know, it was just self-inflicted mistakes once again, whether it was bad play design or Nick Chubb, you know, having his own guy kick him and the ball coming up or him being a long run and then, like, hey, guys come from behind and strip the ball out. That's what they do in the NFL. You got to be ready for that. It was a great strip, great everything. But when they're getting close there, you got to go two hands and kind of hold it in. But it's, yeah, the Patriots, even with the easy schedule, seem to be dodging some bullets with teams messing up under the pressure of playing the Patriots, too, to where they're not tested that way. And it's just you're never going to pull off a win in New England that way when you turn over the ball, like you said, three times in a row.
Turnover margin this year for the Patriots.
Yeah.
They are plus 17.
It's insane.
Do you know the next best?
Oh, okay. I'm not.
Without looking it up.
Yep, no, I'm not going to look it up.
As you say,
I'm just looking at the teams.
There are four teams tied.
Well, I got to think San Francisco is towards the top, right?
They're up there. I do know
Green Bay might be up to the top, maybe? No?
But what about the number? So they're plus 17,
yes,
New England.
Right.
There's a bunch of teams below them tied.
Yeah.
Where do you think they're at?
Like
plus what?
Plus 8, maybe?
Plus 7.
Yeah, I would think, yeah.
They're,
I
mean, 10 better than any other team in the NFL in turnover margin.
Yeah, it's not only the talent, but then the scheme and the confusion are all adding to the turnovers that the Patriots are forcing on a week-to-week basis, and it's amazing defense the way they're playing right now.
Packers, Steelers, Seahawks, and Titans.
Packers, Steelers, Seahawks, and Titans. Okay.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that are tied at minus 7?
Those are at plus 7.
Plus 7, excuse me.
They're all at
yes,
plus 7,
yes.
And New England's at plus 17 this year. Shout out to Patriots linebacker Jamie Collins, 12 solo tackles, most this week in the NFL, 1.5 sacks.
Gosh, he's like found a new career. I mean, up in New England again. It's
another
like a
one.
Second wind. Well, yeah, but it, you know, again, it shows just that scheme fit is real. I mean, it's a real thing. Oh, you know, hey, you're here and you did well. Everybody else in football wants you. We trade you to a team and they think, oh, we got the guy that does well. He should do well for us. Well, you're not playing them the same way the team he just came from and was playing well with. And then you expect the same results. I mean, as you know with anything, I mean, you have to be put in a position to succeed to where, hey, these are the strengths and weaknesses of this player, and we're going to try to limit the amount of situations we put him in his weak situations and you know, accentuate and try to put him in a lot of strength positions a lot, and you're seeing that. And he's got a very versatile base as far as outside linebacker, inside linebacker, can cover people, can rush the passer, so he's pretty damn good.
What'd you think at the end of the game? Odell Beckham had a gift for Tom Brady.
Oh, what was the gift? I didn't know that.
He gave him some cleats. Here, I'll get.
Oh, I remember hearing. I remember hearing that.
Goat hair.
Wow.
Goat hair, apparently.
It's, wow. That's kind of cool. Odell's cleat game is unmistaken. The best part of that picture, though, okay?
Yeah.
Is the background.
Is
the
Baker.
Like Baker looking like, hey, I didn't get one of those. Yeah. Why didn't I get one of those?
I mean, he might have gotten one of them, but
no, he doesn't get goat hair cleats. If he did, then that's false advertisement. Okay, there's only a few people that should get goat hair cleats. Okay, and I'm very interested to watch that film because I would like to see too. You know, Odell made some comments after the game about, you know, he thought they were going to be a little more aggressive towards him because I think, you know, they expected he might get some one-on-one coverage. And from what I saw on TV, it did look like he got played one-on-one more than I've seen.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that on TV. I need to watch the film to see where the safeties were at and everything like that. But, I would have thought they would have found some ways to get him the ball in his hands a few more times.
One more nugget for the Patriots defense. They're giving up touchdowns in the red zone just 14% of the time, by far the best in the NFL.
Yeah, so well, shocker. That's where they're always phenomenal. They score touchdowns, you kick field goals. We score touchdowns, you kick field goals. And you look up and it's 21-9 and you go, man, we feel like we're going toe-to-toe. Yeah, well, they're scoring touchdowns and you're kicking field goals.
So let's go to the other team that will be in the Super Bowl taking on the Patriots in a couple months from now.
I mean, nothing's changed my opinion from that yesterday.
We're going deep dive into Panthers versus 49ers.
Yep.
we thought, okay, the 49ers, similar to the Patriots, have had some easy games, and the schedule hasn't taxed them as much as maybe some other teams out there.
Sure.
So we thought, okay, this is good. This is a good test for that running game against the Carolina defense, and we'll see. The Carolina offense has been okay without Cam, and so we'll see how they handle a elite defense in the 49ers, and the answer was not well.
No.
They didn't handle it.
Not well at all. I mean, just got overwhelmed. Now, a lot of the game, and we're going to talk about Panthers O, 49ers D here to start it off, but, you know, of course, the Panthers O was put in a bad spot from the get-go because their defense got run over early, so that kind of made them abandon maybe their total game plan and what they want to do. I mean, you know, they looked up and they were going, oh my gosh, it's 21-3, and we're just getting warmed up here. I think the big thing that, you know, the big thing for me more than anything is the 49ers, what I saw on film in this game, and a lot like the Patriots, you can't just go, oh, we're going to come out and run our stuff against you. Like the 49ers, if you're just going to run your stuff and run like, oh, basic pass concepts and think you're going to like get by beating the 49ers defense that way, no. The 49ers defense is arguably the best in football. They are every bit in conversation with the New England Patriots. I just like to, right now, yardage-wise, they're the number one defense in football. Points-wise, it's New England. But so you have to do some things to take away their aggressiveness through your schematics. And that's, I think, the biggest issue I had with the game in general. There was none of that, okay? The run game maybe had a chance to be successful if the game stayed close, but we'll never know because the game wasn't close. And then, you know, to just come out with kind of a, you know, for lack of a better, just a middle of the road passing attack and thought that was going to get it done against this defense. It's just, I don't see, I did not like the game plan, I guess is what I'm saying going into this.
Do they feel that Kyle Allen can handle anything?
Well, I think this is the formula that this is the point, and that's a great question, and that's where I want to go with this, because that's where I was trying to go as I was fumbling around with my words here. They've won that way to this point. They've been able to just go, hey, we'll play defense, we'll feed Christian McCaffrey the ball, and we'll run the pass plays that we run the first 2 weeks of training camp with Kyle Allen, and if he just executes them the right way, that's good. That's good. That'll work against Arizona's and some of the other teams in football. But I'm just saying, if they want to beat the elite teams, like if they want to, and I don't know if you read all my notes, but if they want to play with the big boys in the NFC, they're going to need to do more. And that's where, to me, and again, I've been saying, like, hey, don't switch out Kyle Allen yet. Kyle Allen, if you ride this wave until it ends. And, you know, this was one little glimmer in, and I'm not saying they make the switch yet, but a little glimmer into the evidence of going, I don't know if this will be enough to beat the upper echelons of the NFC when they want to, if they want to get in the playoffs. They need a quarterback that can make some plays on his own when the defense is dominating. They need a quarterback where the coordinator can orchestrate some plays and go, oh, this play is going to fuck them up this week. I mean, our quarterback with his skill set throwing 50-yard lasers. So they can't do any and bring anything unusual to the pass game to stress a defense out that way either. And it all just snowballed into the 49ers just kind of whooping their ass.
Did they try when they were down 27-3? You made a note that they tried to throw outside the numbers a little bit more. Did they try to open it up a little bit?
Well, they did. They tried to a little bit, but it was just too little too late. Yeah. Because at that point, too, the other issue was, yeah, there were still throws there to be had outside the numbers. And what Ahmed's referring to, you know, the 49ers, they're put 7 and 8 guys at the line of scrimmage every play. So you have to almost come out going, you know, we're going to make them think, we're going to do lots of change of direction stuff because they're so fast and aggressive. But the big thing is they're really going to try to scare you away from running the ball with numbers, and they're going to scare you away from throwing the ball in the middle of the field because they're going to have 8 guys kind of there between the tackle box. And what you're referring to is you have to throw the ball outside the numbers against the 49ers. You got to do that at least at first. That's where they're most vulnerable. They play a lot of single safety looks. It's either 3-deep zone or man-to-man. And they'll give you out routes and comebacks and deep curls and, you know, go routes if the corner gets a little, sneaky in the looking into the backfield. Yeah. But they did not do that. And the 49ers were all over their stuff early, and then they got him into a game of throwing the ball, and their pass rush took over.
Christian McCaffrey broke another long one. The MVP debate, although it seems like it's going towards the quarterbacks, as it always does with Aaron Rodgers having a couple
He's
good weeks.
He's still phenomenal.
117 yards, 14 carries, had a 40-yard touchdown run.
Yeah.
And on that run, I want to give some props to some wide receivers out there.
Okay, cool.
I was looking at it. DJ Moore had a good block on Quan Alexander.
Yep. DJ Moore, he came down right from the left side and blocked him down and pinned him inside. That was really well done.
You know, he only had 5 catches, 38 yards, but that was a key
He's
play.
He's a player,
key
DJ
play
Moore.
For them. And then downfield.
Yeah.
You got Jarius Wright, who did just enough get in the way of Jimmy Ward.
Right.
And then you had a good block by Curtis Samuel on Richard Sherman. So I wanted to give props to the wide receiver coach, Jim Hostler.
Way to go.
His first year in Carolina.
Yeah.
It was just a cool play to see, you know, the wide receivers, you think all the time, and you do see sometimes when the play's not coming their way, or if it's a running play, they're just jogging off into the distance. Those were three running or wide receivers that were making key blocks on that play.
Willing to do it. I think if you look at any successful running team, like even the 49ers, if we switch it around to them or the other teams in the NFL that are running well, they have receivers that are willing to block. That's a big part of the game. We don't ever talk about it. It's not sexy. But it is when you see big runs like that, it's usually sprung by a wide receiver making a big block on a safety or hustling downfield to get in the way of that last guy who might make the tackle. And, you know, those three guys are football players that the Carolina has at the receiver position.
And Nick Bosa is really good.
Nick Bosa is insane. I can't get over how much better week by week. It's just more explosive, disruptive. I mean, not only his first step and the fact that he can, like, bend around the corner and get his shoulder, like, a foot and a half off the ground, but his little abilities to just side-to-side movement where he can get the tackle kind of off balance, not knowing which way he's going to go there. He's got great feel, when to get his hands up, as we saw in the interception, and even other pass plays where he just gets his hands in the way of the quarterback as they're trying to throw the ball. He's a superstar. He's a superstar, and I didn't think I was going to say this, but I think he's made for the NFL more than his brother, especially in the pass rushing aspect. He's just got a little more compact and explosive than Joey, which makes him that much more dangerous when he's coming off the edge.
I remember in the draft, I was out there in the Bay Area, and everyone was every win that the 49ers got. It was like, we're losing our chance at Nick Bosa. We're blowing it. Because for the longest time, it was obvious, right? It was going to be Nick Bosa, and he was sitting out his final year at Ohio State just so he could stay healthy and be the number one pick in the draft. And then Kyler Murray got, you know, noticed. And then you got Cliff over there that loved him. So that helped both Nick Bosa and obviously the 49ers.
Yeah, the 49ers, the key to their team right now is that, you know, they're allowed to play an 8-man box like I'm talking about, but they don't really have to blitz ever. Their front four can get to the quarterback all by themselves. Their front four can stop the run all by themselves. They don't need, like, any, like, oh, we got to bring the linebacker or the nickel back off the edge to help our D-line to stop the running. They don't have to do any of that. And it's deep, it's talented, and with Bosa, it does. It's taken them to another level. Because you got D Ford with the trade with the Chiefs and all of that, but now you just got one other weapon there, and they're game wreckers. And we've seen a lot of really awesome defenses in the Super Bowl era when they have more than one game wrecker. You know, those kind of players can win games in playoffs in the Super Bowl because of their great physical ability.
That interception was sick.
Insane.
3 sacks. Would you put him in the top 3 of Defensive Player of the Year candidates right now?
Oh, you know what? Okay, that's a really good question.
We had Shaq Barrett there early in the
year. Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I think him and Miles. So right now, Bosa and Miles Garrett come to my mind right off the bat.
Okay.
So, and Aaron Donald is still in that conversation.
Sure.
I don't give a damn what his numbers say. So he's there. I'm just trying to think if I'm missing anybody else. Like, Cam Jordan's been phenomenal.
He's been really good.
Phenomenal. So he would be another guy that I think's in the convo. And, gosh, you know, I don't know who you'd go with on New England. The New England's got a few guys where I feel like you
can spread the vote.
Well, it's like you could go Gilmore, Van Noy, Jamie Collins. All three are having really special years.
McCourty, maybe.
But, no, I think I would. With Nick Bosa, I think I would have been top three. I would right now. Yes, I would.
49ers defense is good. Last year they had the worst interception rate in the NFL. This year they're second to go along with the best sack per pass rate in the NFL right now.
Well, and it's all about, you know, the upfront guys that are causing a lot of these issues. You know, the Patriots, it's the same way. Their upfront guys are causing the issues, but they're getting to cause the issues more because their back end's so good that they can give you a lot of different blitz looks and things like that. And then all of a sudden you just, oh, somebody's coming free. I got to get the ball out of my hand. Oh, interception. Patriots got it. San Francisco can do it just with their front four, like we're talking about, where they don't want to play a ton of man-to-man and do that stuff. They just go, hey, tree trunks, Buckner and Armstead, get in there. And then freak shows on the edge. You get in there, too. And the quarterback will do something stupid because he'll panic when you guys are getting close. And that's kind of how they're doing it.
And there was a time there where Eric Armstead, there was worries, oh, dude, they take him too high. Is he not going to pan out to be as high as we drafted him? But he's been so good.
Yeah, so good.
Taking a big step.
Yep.
Is that it? Panthers 0,
49ers I think so. D. I don't think there's anything more to say that. I just think with the 49ers, you better come out aggressive. If you think you're just going to come out running basic, like, oh, this is what we do, bullshit. Sorry. It ain't gonna fly with San Francisco. Plus, you need to push the envelope here because of what we're seeing with San Francisco's offense. You know, they're so capable of putting up points and numbers and yards that if you don't come into the game facing them going, we need to do this too, then you're going to be in trouble. It's a little like the Kansas City effect. You got to kind of like break out of your molds when you play San Francisco right now because we're going to talk about it. Their offense is on fucking fire. Fire. Fuego.
Running the football.
And Fuego.
49ers O versus Panthers D. So here it is. I mean, they can just run the football on anyone.
Anybody.
Tevin Coleman, 4 touchdowns, 3 in the first half. Had 11 carries, 105 yards, 2 catches, 13 yards, another touchdown there. He faced an 8-man box more than any other running back this week, 64% of the time. Didn't matter.
No.
He was amazing once again. And I know from watching the film here, and you like what Kyle has done up to this point this year.
Yeah.
You just feel like that play design of the running game might be number one in the NFL
right now? I think it's number one. It is. I mean, you know, because, like, to your point, it's an 8-man box, but the scheme is so good, it just doesn't matter. Oh, we're outnumbered? It doesn't matter. I'm going to find ways to just screw your scheme over. And really, you know, for all those out there, go back and look at the highlights of the touchdown runs. You know, again, yes, they have talent, so I'm not trying to take away from the running backs. Yeah. They're home run hitters. We know their O-line's good. But you know, some of these holes are created in some of these plays, whether you think of the Debo Samuel's, you know, his touchdown, or you think of Tevin Coleman's, you know, the draw play up the middle for, what was that, 50 yards, you know, the toss sweep to Tevin Coleman where, I mean, nobody's touching this guy. They're not down in two-hand touch. So that just tells you all the things they're doing in the run game that are exposing the scheme. The thing that's brilliant about Shanahan is we know he's famous for the inside and outside zone, the Shanahan zone scheme, everything like that. But he doesn't beat his head in the wall with it. So in this game, he came out and basically said, I'm going to do all the things to keep the Panthers honest so they can't over-defend my normal run game early. And he came out, speed sweep, reverse, fake speed sweep. You run up the middle to where backside pursuit defenders and stuff are always like, oh, I got to stay home. Oh, wait. Oh, there's the run. Oh, wait. No, he's coming back out the back door. And they don't know what the hell to expect. So you take away the aggressive nature of the front seven or the front eight from what the Panthers are playing in that game. And, you know, slowly but surely, then all of a sudden their heads spinning around, gosh, speed, sweep, reverse, what, there's coming everywhere. Then all of a sudden the basic normal run plays start to work because now they're going, I got to be patient and be home because, you know, yeah, he might give the guy the zone handoff, but he might give the guy the speed sweep or the shuffle pass that comes around or the reverse or the fake reverse pass. And that's where Shanahan is brilliant right now. He's playing his offense off of each other, and you just have no feel for what they're going to do.
And they're all fast.
They're very fast.
Any given week, they could be the fastest ball carrier in the NFL.
They're the fastest team in football maybe right now. I think we just talked about their defense, and you see it. You're watching it. You like the 49ers.
Yep.
Yeah, between that, the running backs, the way they hit the hole, you're right. It's one of the fastest teams and certainly one of the fastest offenses in the game.
So what'd you think of Emmanuel Sanders? Huh? They got him out there, 55
of
67 snaps, 82%, most by a wide receiver. Did catch a touchdown, first touchdown of the game for the 49ers, but didn't need him that much.
No, they didn't.
Four catches.
It's a good way to kind of just break him in, get him going. He is certainly going to have a role within the offense, but they just didn't need it yesterday, so it didn't matter. I mean, he's going to be the go-to guy. I don't doubt that at all. But when you run the ball that way and do everything that they did on that side of the ball, yeah, there was no reason. They never had to get back into the drop back pass type of football game because everything else was working. Between all the creative run designs and the screens, like, I just want to tell anybody out there, go back and watch the first three drives of that game by the 49ers. I mean, it's just one, you know, I call these like fuck you plays,
yeah,
one after another. Oh, it's fake the run to the left, fake the reverse to the left, screen out the back door to the tight end. You know, fake the run hard to the left. Oh, screen to the receiver way on the other side of the fall on the line of scrimmage. And the linemen are – it's just one play after another of like, wow, that's a really cool way to do that, and that's a really good way, an easy way to get yards.
Utilizing all the weapons, they utilized George Kittle once again, 6 catches, 86 yards, had a touchdown that was called back on a block. But yep, he had 7 targets. Emmanuel – Sanders had 5. Who do you think has more targets moving forward on the 49ers, Kittle or Sanders?
I think it'll still be George Kittle just because he's such a special talent. And then because of their run game and they want to do more off of that, like off of the run game, there's just more creative ways to kind of use the tight end than there is maybe the receiver. The receiver, sure. Emmanuel Sanders, certainly going to be a big part of it. But, I just think Kittle fits really nicely within the formula of the way Kyle Shanahan wants to run his offense.
49ers off to their best start since 1990 when they won their first 10 games of the season. Carolina had won 4 in a row. So what do you think about the Carolina Panthers D? I mean, we thought they were a pretty good defense coming in.
Yeah.
And this is a defense that might finally slow down this 49ers offense, this run game, but
yeah,
they did not.
No, they did not. You know, and this is like just a few things I starred in my notes. I wrote down. I'm not sitting here going, wow, the 49ers just physically are whooping the Panthers. Like, oh, my gosh, they're just pushing the line of scrimmage back. And No, what they did is Shanahan's on fire, and because of his play design and pre-snap motions and shift, he had their head spinning, so they didn't know which way to go. It was literally like, which way did he go? Which way did he go? So there's that. You know, the other thing is this Panthers defense is good. But when you're playing the elite offenses of the football, you can't, again, a little like their offense, you can't just come out and go, we're just going to do what we do. Oh, okay. Well, the guy on the other sidelines knows what you're doing. And
he's
scary.
That. We've
right?
been waiting for that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the things that You got to be a little different when you play the upper echelons teams in football and know, oh, okay, our defense is good, but we're playing a special play designer and offense here. You know, I might have to change up some of my tendencies. Usually on 2nd and 7, I play this coverage. But this week, man, this guy, he's really good when he's got a feel for what you do. I'm gonna change my coverage on 2nd and 7 from what I normally do because I just don't want him to get a beat. I just thought with the way they lined up, they were a little too predictable, and you know I'm into disguising too. Mm-hmm. And when you're just going to line up in what we line up in against the elite of the NFL on offense, you're going to get roasted. I don't care who you are.
Jimmy Garoppolo didn't have to do a ton.
No.
18 to 22, so just 4 incomplete passes, 175 yards. One of those incomplete passes was an interception, but did throw 2 touchdowns. Happy
yeah.
with what you saw from
yeah,
him?
Yeah, I mean, happy. I mean, again, I think it's still like a question mark as far as, you know, that's what I find fascinating about the Patriots and the 49ers. They're so good that they've yet to have a game where they have to rely on their quarterbacks
yeah.
to go. And that's no disrespect to either one. I mean, they're both playing really well and winning football games. But they haven't had that game yet where you go, man, our run game's not great. Our defense is kind of struggling. I got to do it today. I got to make it happen. But, you know, maybe they won't have to. Then maybe
right.
that's how good they are. Maybe they're going to be able
good
to do
defense,
this the whole year.
Good running game.
Right.
Don't have
just
to.
Play balanced football and, you know, we'll make a play here and there. And that's all you got to do.
51-13, 49ers 7-0.
Insane.
They got to play Thursday night now at
yeah,
Arizona.
Yeah. So, yep. That is that should be a win, no doubt about it.
We did. We got it.
We got it. I think we hit it all.
That was a good one. I like that one. We got into the X's and O's. Let's go through a few more headlines here. Let's go over to the Rams. We'll stay out west. They defeat the Bengals.
Well, actually, they were really
London.
East, right?
Yeah, right?
Out west in East London.
If you fly far enough west, you'll eventually get
you'll
there.
Eventually hit it. Yes, you will.
So they improved to 5-3, the 24-10 win. My headline?
Yeah.
Cup runneth after the catch.
I like it.
So
I like
Cooper,
it.
Cooper Kupp was amazing.
Amazing.
220 yards, 1 touchdown on just 7 catches. Had that reverse flea flicker 65-yard touchdown where he got the handoff. He pitched it to BW. Or no, he pitched it.
Yeah.
He made B.W. Webb fall down before he even caught it.
Right.
Caught it and then scored a touchdown.
Yeah. That was pretty awesome.
He's legitimately good.
Oh, no. Like, legitimately. This is not just a system guy. This is a guy that's physically gifted. Like, he can run away from people. He's a really good route runner. He's a pretty big guy when you see him in person. I mean, I don't know what Cooper Kupp is. I'm going to say 6'1 or 2, somewhere around
that's
that.
That's bigger than I would have thought.
Yeah. But, no, he was the star of the game. And, I think, again, you know, I want to sit here and go, I'm surprised the Rams didn't dominate them more. Well, you know, you got to take this into account. You know, the head coach on the other side used to work for the Rams. So he knows a lot about, you know, what they want to do and how to attack their team and all of that. So I wasn't shocked by that. I think my other takeaway from this game more than anything would be this. The Rams no longer can depend on just being a run team. It's Jared Goff in the pass game. And I've been, like, known as a Jared Goff hater, through my life because, like, people were like, he's one of the five best quarterbacks in football. I'm a hater on stupid narratives, okay? That's what I'm a hater on. And when they were winning and then last year going, he's one of the five best quarterbacks in football. Why? Because the team went to the Super Bowl?
Right.
No, he's not. But then they lose three games and people go, Jared Goff stinks. And now lately I have people going, man, you're defending Jared Goff a lot. Well, because the narrative has stupidly gone in the wrong direction again now. Yeah. Now he went from, hey, he's top five, you're fucking stupid, how could you not call him top five? To now he's, hey, they should have never paid him that contract. Jared Goff, through their losing streak and yesterday, has played really, really well. Okay, the 49ers game, I know statistically wasn't good, but the 49ers were good and we're all over that shit. There's nothing you can do. I just saw again just yesterday, I just thought a number of throws where I went, damn, like, okay, Jared Goff, he's putting it on the dime.
You're going to put him in the damn okay
category?
Yeah,
putting him already there. Well, when you throw it 17, when you may have 17 completions and you throw up for 372 yards, and I know one of those was the Cooper Kupp run after catch, but still, Cooper Kupp had another big pass play down the middle of the field. He was double covered, and Goff just threw it right on him. I'm just seeing more and more throws like that. So I don't like the fact that everything's gone the opposite way with Goff. I don't like that aspect.
You think he's comfortably a top 15
quarterback
in the NFL.
That's what I'm saying. That's all I'm trying to say. Yes, that's all I'm trying to say.
One more stat on Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
He has more yards after the catch, 404, than Brandon Cooks has total receiving yards this year at 402.
Wow.
So
Well, it speaks to, I think, his size and physicality.
He's 6'2".
Yeah.
Cooper Kupp.
He's 6'2"?
I would have lost a lot of money thinking he was like 5'11".
Yeah, no, I know. I think a lot of people think he's like a little more Julian Edelman.
That's what I thought,
too. I know. He surprised me when I met him for the first time. I was like, damn, okay.
So, what's going on here? You're taller than I thought. So Rams get a win, as do the Seahawks, with taking on the 1-7 Atlanta Falcons, beat them by a touchdown. Really, it was not as close as the score indicated. It was 27-11 with 5 minutes to go here. My headline, passing yards rendered meaningless because Matt Schaub threw for 460.
Yes.
They don't mean anything anymore.
No.
Like when there's two, it's just like they lost all meaning.
Well, yeah, when you're down 24-0 and you're not throwing the ball yards within those first 24 points, it does not count the same.
They threw 52 times.
Right. Now, I'm a little, disappointed that the Seahawks couldn't give them that finishing blow there late in the game and let them hang around. But I think this speaks to the bigger problem of, you know, the Seahawks in the secondary, they're a little questionable. They really are. And if their defensive line can't ruin the football game, you're going to be able to gash them for passing yards. And that's kind of what I saw yesterday. You know, let alone I'm interested to see, you know, and again, you always have to take into account, just like we just talked about with Rams-Bengals, when coaches have familiarity with each other. And this was another matchup. You know, Dan Quinn came from Seattle. So he knows little things that Pete Carroll might want to do. He might understand some of Pete Carroll's philosophies as what he tells the offense and what they want to do. But I was a little surprised that even, you know, with the 24-point lead, that life was so hard for the offense at times and Russell Wilson couldn't find, you know, people to throw to as much as I would have thought.
Falcons, it continues to be bad for them. They go into their bye week with questions. The owner, Arthur Blank, was talking to reporters saying, "We got no plans of making any changes right now." He said, "We have a lot of intelligence on the coaching staff," which they do. I mean, Dan Quinn's been to a Super Bowl. You got Dirk Cutter there. You have Mike Mularkey. You have Raheem Morris. You got all these former head coaches in the NFL.
Right.
Seems like with experience, you'd have a pretty good staff, but it's something that's just not working there for the Falcons. And obviously not having Matt Ryan hurt, but then your quarterback comes in and throws for 460, so
yeah, I mean, right. I mean, hey, listen, they're better with Matt Ryan. I don't doubt that at all. But Schaub is still serviceable, understands the offense, and then, you know, they got weapons. So that was a good matchup for them. Like, that would have been a dangerous game if Matt Ryan plays. I do believe that. Because, you know, Julio and Calvin Ridley, they would have had a field day on I think, you know, and they did have a field day in a lot of ways against that Seahawks secondary.
Seahawks get a win. Let's do a couple more before we get into our of the Packers win.
I love listening
Chiefs.
To your
the headline.
Yeah, I do.
Okay,
I
so
like
let's
it.
Let's go over to the NFC North because we are going to get to the Packers and Chiefs here in a second. Lions defeat the Giants. Lions improved to 3-3-1. Giants go down to 2-6, 31-26, the final score. My headline.
Sorry, Jonald.
Sorry about that.
Sorry, Jonald McDonald.
Staff believes in staff.
Oh.
So the coaching staff believes in Matt Stafford because they were up, what was it, 5 with 12 minutes to go. And some teams, you know, fourth quarter, you're like, okay, let's just run the ball. Let's not do anything dumb here. Darrell Bevell said, no, we're going to do something dumb. Turned out not to be dumb at all. Flea flicker to a wide open Kenny Galladay, who beat Antoine Bethea. Matt Patricia said after the game, I was holding my breath on that one. But they went for it, and I give him a lot of credit because it was a touchdown.
Yeah, good job by you, first off. I like your little play on words there. Stafford's been phenomenal,
Good.
We all want to shit on Stafford when he didn't play well last year. Now, let's self-evaluate. Oh, Stafford's been good. I'd like to hear some talk about how Stafford's playing so well because he's one of those guys that nobody wants to talk about unless it's bad, and then everybody wants to tell you how shitty he is.
I love Matt Stafford.
I do, too. Yeah. He's going to go down as one of the most underrated quarterbacks in the history of football because he didn't have a great team around him. But to your point with that play, you know, first off, Patricia, he knows something about trick plays coming from Belichick in New England. You know, and this, I'll give Darrell Bevell a lot of credit too, the offensive coordinator, because I complain about this. Why is it that New England's like the only team that runs trick plays? They're the one team that doesn't need to run them ever, and has 19 years of dominance. They seem to have all the trick plays, and everybody else is like, oh, we're just going to run our stuff. We're good enough with our stuff. We'll run our stuff.
Yeah.
But the team that can invent every pass play and run play in the history of mankind, somehow they have enough time to dial up trick plays, too. That was a huge play, you're right, and a huge moment where the momentum had gone back to the Giants' side. I mean, Daniel Jones played phenomenal. You know, really, you look at that game, Daniel Jones' early lateral pass to Saquon Barkley that got picked up and run for a touchdown, you know, that was a big moment in the game. It put the Giants in the hole early, then they went 3-and-out. The Lions got the ball back, went down and scored. So before the Giants even got going, they were down 14-0. But Daniel Jones didn't blink once again and really played awesome.
They have lost 4 in a row, have the Giants now, and they're going to have a players-only meeting.
You
had those?
Oh, yeah. That's when shit gets straightened out.
Does it really or not?
Hey, guys, we got to play harder. Guys, we got to get to the meetings 3 minutes before they start, not 30 seconds.
Like, they go, that sounds like a coach. Get out of here. Players only.
I never was a fan of player meetings.
You had them, though?
I had them. I'm not going to name people who got them. But I just, it was usually.
They were not motivating to you?
No, it really was not. It's, it's a lot of nonsense and hot air and guys pounding their chest like, hey, look, I'm a leader.
Yeah.
You know, hey, how about just like when we're in the middle of the meeting, be like, hey, fucking pay attention. Or you're in practice field, just yell at everybody and be like, hey, what are we doing out here?
Or when we're on the field, just win the game.
That would help too.
So that's going on. Lions get the win. Bears lose. They lose by a point, 17-16 to the Chargers. A last second 41-yard field goal goes just left. So my headline. Matt Nagy shows confidence in kicker, holder, and long snapper. No confidence in anyone else. So that's
funny.
My headline. He had a lot of confidence in that kicking game.
Yes,
and that
he
was
did.
About it.
We are not getting any closer. You guys are too good.
In fact, we'll go farther away. We'll go a yard back because we feel like that'll give us a better chance.
Matt Nagy's okay. His explanation, like, hey, we're not throwing the ball. I get
zero thought of running the ball, zero thought of.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not going to say, like, the zero thought of the running the ball thing. I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, I get it. Like, hey, I understand where he's coming from, but I still think at the end of the day, with one time out there in that type of scenario, and you have run the ball with some decent success on the day, that I would have pounded up the middle maybe once or twice more just to get a little closer. It is Chicago. It is windy. you are famous right now for having kickers, you know, choke in the clutch. That's the only thing I would argue. I'm not going to sit here and go, that was the dumbest thing ever. I don't think it was that egregious.
It probably didn't change the percentages all that much.
Probably not a whole lot. But unless, you ran a ball up the middle with Montgomery and he all of a sudden ripped one for 15.
Which is probably unlikely.
Probably unlikely, yes.
Because they're
expecting, they're expecting run. I get that. I understand
even
that.
Even though he did have 135 yards.
Yes. A lot of it on one run. But I think the game, to get back to the point of the whole game, the game was won or lost in the first half when the Bears got inside the 10-yard line four times and came away with 9 points. Mm. They kicked three field goals and missed one field goal. And that, to me, was really as we've talked about a lot in recent weeks, when you have your foot on the team's throat and you don't put them away, and the other team, you know, has a guy like Phillip Rivers who's not going to just fold the tent and say, okay, let's go home, this is not our day.
Right.
You know, you can let them hang around, and, you know, eventually they made a play. And what they did, Melvin Ingram gets a strip, they got an interception, you know, Phillip Rivers finds an Eckler out on the right side, and he makes a guy miss, and it's a touchdown. And all of a sudden you go, man, we've been dominating the game. We're losing 17-16. How does that happen? Well, that's what happens in the NFL. They got pros, too.
Joey Bosa is one of those pros for the Chargers, had four tackles for a loss, most this week in the NFL, three quarterback hits, two sacks. So right when you were about to pass the torch from one Bosa to the other, they both had a good game.
I know. I would like to see more of it. I saw a few plays where he was back there yesterday, too. He still did not pop off the screen the same way like Nick Bosa did. There was just a few plays in the game yesterday where, you know, we're trying to watch it all, where I just was like, I know it's Nick Bosa by the way he's in his stands and the way he comes off the ball, and you just go, ooh, is he going to turn the corner? Ooh, it's just every play. You're kind of on edge to see what he does.
And with the Bears, one positive for the Bears that I hope doesn't get overlooked, you know, the special teams coach is Chris Tabor. You look at the kick and you're like, that's how you lost the game. I was like, the one thing they do have, their best offense, is their special teams. Tariq Cohen, Cordarrelle Patterson,
yes.
Number one in yards per kickoff return.
They
number
set
one
them
in
up
yards
a lot.
Per punt return in the NFL. Where would they be without that?
No, I know. They would be in really deep crap. Because, you know, at least say Nagy gave the run game a chance yesterday. But the lack of identity showed itself more in those red zone trips that ended up in the field goal. They have no red zone offense. They have no bread and butter plays to make a defense go, ooh, we have to stop the bread and butter, and that opens up other stuff. And that's to me an issue, too. I mean, even look at their red zone plays. It's sideline to sideline. It's drop back, and, oh, we'll just throw a jump ball fade to a guy that's not even that famous for catching jump balls, whatever it is. And it just kind of goes back to their lack of identity as an offense altogether.
Bears fall to 3-4. Time to talk about the Packers. That was our Sunday night game.
Yep.
Mike Tirico was able to talk to Aaron Rodgers before we hear a snippet of that interview.
Lucky him.
We gotta pump up Mike Tirico again. This is the part of the podcast where we say how great Mike is.
Yes.
It's a little like we get
it's
it.
It's redundant. Okay?
Yeah, it's redundant. We get it. Mike is really good. He's good at what he does, at whatever he does.
Right. So having said that, Mike Tirico is really awesome. Really good at what he does, all right?
Yeah.
Check out the Mike Tirico podcast. Okay, Football Night in America, Week 8 recap with the guys, Tony, Rodney, Florio. And then he did have a full interview with Aaron Rodgers last week. It was really cool. Rodgers opens up. You know, I always respect that about Aaron Rodgers. He's not afraid to kind of speak his mind and say some things. So check that out. That full interview is on NBCSports.com. And it'll be on TV, or what is that, on Thursday? It'll be on Thursday at 10 Eastern.
We're going to put it on TV.
It'll be on NBC Sports Network, NBCSN. It'll be on there. And here, we got a little bite we want to play just from Tirico and Aaron Rodgers together in the press box.
You've been really consistent at your press conferences, calling out the offensive line, 6 sacks in 7 games, the defense and the playmaking that they've achieved. How much of a burden do you feel is off of you now that you don't have to be Houdini every snap?
Well, I want to be Houdini. I
want to
be Houdini as long as I can. I want to keep playing the way I play, but the offensive line doesn't get a lot of credit. They need to hear it from me. Those press conferences go a long way, and I know what I'm doing. And I know it's important that they hear it consistently and the message is consistent with who I think is really helping us win games. I know my responsibility and my role and the expectations the guys have on me to play well each week. I have the same for myself.
So that's, I mean, I'm going to listen. I know that.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, he wants to be Houdini.
Yeah,
he was again.
He was again. Again. He might only have a few years left of being Houdini. But yes, last night.
Is he 35 now?
Yeah, I think he's 35.
So let's go deep dive.
Yeah,
go
let's
into
do
it. So we'll start with the Packers offense versus the Chiefs D. If I had to do a headline for this one, I would say running errands, because it was a couple running errands,
right.
Scrambling Aaron Rodgers, and then Aaron Jones, who had 67 yards rushing, 159 yards receiving, and two touchdowns for him. People thought this game was going to be maybe more of a blowout. Chiefs defense has not been world beaters by any means.
Yep.
Has been a little more aggressive lately, which has been good to see.
Yes.
So it took a while for that Packers offense to kick into gear, but you did the deep dive on the Packers, though, and Aaron Rodgers. What'd you see?
Well, I think the big thing is, I mean, Rodgers was phenomenal. My biggest overarching theme is I like what I'm seeing from the Chiefs defense. And I know people out there are going to go, what? I mean, they let up 31 points. And, it's better than what we've seen in other weeks. That's all I'll say. I mean, it's 374 yards of total offense. That's not, like, egregious. I know that's not perfect. But they made life hard on Green Bay last night. And it isn't Aaron Rodgers, number 12, a quarterback. That game's there to be had. They're going to pull it off. But – number 12 just pulled it off with some of his great audibles, some of his, whether it was the flip into the end zone in the back corner, or it was the first drive of the game and he's getting sacked and he throws a ball 50 yards down the field as he's falling to the ground and the guy catches it to put them on the 10-yard line. Like, again, those are like the Chiefs coordinator. He won the play, like, against the Packers offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
But the Packers offensive coordinator is like, I have Aaron Rodgers, and he trumps your defense, so eat that.
Makes me very smart.
Yeah, that's really it.
There's a graphic on that, too, because you've talked about this on the podcast.
Okay.
So I think we have the numbers for it. Weeks 1-6, this is the pressures and the blitz for the Kansas City Chiefs. Week 1-6, they were 20th in blitz rank in the NFL, 18th in pressure rank. And then they listened to Chris Sims Unbuttoned before week 7. And they're now 8th in those 2 weeks in blitz percentage and 6th in pressure percentage. So they, exactly like you said, and it seems like they've embraced it now. We don't have a good defense. Not great.
No,
right? We have a great offense, elite offense. Even without, Patrick Mahomes, we can score some points. So let's try to make stuff happen, especially against one of the best quarterbacks ever to play the game.
Yes, they're disguising, they're blitzing, they're giving a lot of different looks, they're doing a lot of creative things. And you saw Aaron Rodgers at times, trying to get out of plays at the line of scrimmage. He's telling people to do this because he knows, gosh, the play we called and what they're going to do to us is going to screw us over here. Yeah. We got to change it. All of that. That was part of why they won, too. If you didn't have a really experienced quarterback who knew how to get in and out of certain plays against certain defenses, you're not going to win last night. Spagnuolo, he's great right now. I mean, what he's doing. It's a total curveball from what they were the first 6 weeks of the year. And they're, they do have the ability, and they matched up very well, first off, with the Packers man-to-man. That was an issue. I mean, the Packers could not separate man-to-man. The only guy that really separated was Aaron Jones and the running backs on a few plays.
Yeah.
Other than that, for the most part.
You got no Devontae Adams still.
No, they need him back. I think that was really glaring last night to me more than anything. When I watched the film, I just went, wow, it's glue all over the field. And the Chiefs' defense is not going into the Hall of Fame or the Legion of Boom or anything like that as far as their secondary. But they were all over them. So I think that is a little scary. I will say this just from, like I said, I love what Spagnuolo did and all the blitzes and creativities, doubled some people in certain situations, doubled Jimmy Graham and the slot receiver on the other side and some third downs, all of that. They do it in a sound way. Okay, that's the other thing, too. There's one thing to be creative, but if, you're being creative and, voiding an area of the field where I go, whoa, that's, stupid, that's, not good. I want to see creative, yet you're being sound, and it makes sense. And I'm seeing that. And, I'll say this from the Packers standpoint. I do think they got away from what they have made them a little bit. They got into the shotgun fest a little there for a while.
Okay.
Where it was like old Green Bay, hey, Aaron, just save us and get us to the right play. And if it's not the right play, make it happen and make it the right play anyways.
That might have been Aaron calling.
Well,
Aaron,
it could have. It could have. Well, I do think that at certain times they need to make sure there's a certain personnel set on the field to where he doesn't get that freedom to just go, let me get in the shotgun, everybody get out, and I'll figure it out. you know, what got them there and what will calm down a team like the Chiefs. And when they did this, it showed when they got into two tight end sets or one tight end, two running backs. And now you have to worry about the run fits and the play action pass. You know, they got away from that for a little while and played into the Chiefs' hands where Spags like, oh, he's in the shotgun. They're going to pass it. And I'm going to show blitz and drop out or show blitz and we're going to blitz or, you know, I'm going to do a creative coverage behind it. So it was really a chess match between the two. But I really think it came down to, and I know I hate to say this cop out of a phrase, like it just came down to 12 making a few plays, the great screen at the end of the game. Okay, that was a perfect play call to Aaron Jones to let him run away and score a touchdown. And other than that, I think that's really how I would break it down more than anything. But it was Rodgers' physical ability that helped them out. And I'm encouraged with what I'm seeing from the Chiefs defense.
So the Rodgers play that's on all the highlight reel is the one to Jamal Williams in the back of the end zone, right? Where he's scrambling all around.
Right.
I looked at the play.
Yeah.
I put on my Chris Sims hat.
Yeah.
I don't like it for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
I
think it's a good play for him.
But you don't
I think it was bad.
Well, I mean, he's committed that he's throwing the Jimmy Graham.
He did say that, right?
So that's where I give
not
Rodgers.
Not even that part of it.
Right.
So I was like, immediately.
Yes.
So you snap the ball. You got three receivers to the left.
Yes.
Within the first second.
Right.
Aaron Jones.
Yes.
Is standing wide open on the goal line with no one around him. He didn't even need to have that highlight reel play. It's kind of like in baseball when the center fielder dives because he slowed down, didn't run for it. He didn't need the highlight reel play. Chris is pulling it up on his lap to see if I'm right or not.
I'm going to pull this up and see what you're talking about.
It wasn't that play right there.
Nope. Let me just see. I'll get to it. I might be at the wrong spot.
He could have had the easy touchdown, but yet elects to go with this Hall of Fame scrambling play. You see?
Yeah.
Think.
No, he could have stuck it on him. There's no question. You're right.
Aaron Jones is wide open.
But this is
into the play.
But this is what you got to take into account here. So now, just in grading, so Amon's not wrong. There's a bunch of receivers, three receivers to the left. He's right. Aaron Jones is on the outside of the bunch, and they kind of mess up how they're covering all three guys, and he's open right away.
Immediately.
But you got to take into account what's being coached in the play at times here. So, see, what Rodgers is seeing is a defense end going out and taking Jimmy Graham.
Got it.
So he plays this side first. So he looks over there because he thinks he's going to get the matchup he wants. But the Chiefs don't play man-to-man. They switch it off. So now he kind of comes back. But I don't know if he can't see it or he's just scared because he will play a little conservative at times, especially in these type of situations. He won't take the chance.
So on the other side of the field, there's a defensive end on Jimmy Graham.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's why he's there. See, you see his eyes there?
Yeah,
I get it. And then they never really go back to where Aaron Jones is. He makes a little peek at their pass rush because that's what he does too. He just goes, okay, am I good? Can I sit here and keep being Aaron Rodgers and dance in place and make a move? And then he's like, oh, shit, they're bearing down on me. Oh, shit, I got no one to throw. Well, I got a 6'8 tight end. Let me throw it up to him. And, you know, I take him at his word too. He said he saw.
Might be a running back there too.
Yeah, he saw him coming wheeling around. Yeah. And, you know, Rodgers is one of those guys like Mahomes where a lot of the times I would go, man, that's just lucky. But the fact that they do it 9 out of every 10 times, it's hard to call it luck when it always seems to happen.
I like it again then. Okay, it's a good play again.
Yeah.
I'll give it to you.
Okay,
it's a good play again.
Good. I like you questioning it, though. Way to go.
One more thing on the Packers offense here that I thought was kind of interesting. And I looked at it last year, first and 10. I was like, what do they do on first and 10?
Mm-hmm.
Because Matt LaFleur came in and they talked about they wanted to establish a run game, take some of the pressure off Aaron Rodgers. I was like, man, it seems like he's throwing quite a bit. But on first and 10 this year, they're throwing 51% of the time. Last year is 64% of the time.
There you go.
So they are. They're trying to take, even if they don't always run successfully, they're trying to take some of the pressure off Aaron Rodgers, at least on first down. So
it's making them less predictable, which is creating, I would think they probably have more explosive plays on first down this year, too. Maybe we'll look that up for the next podcast.
I mean, maybe.
Because then it sets up for play action, which they like to do on first down. They come out and they gash you on the first play of a drive or something like that because you have seen run on first down a lot. So defense goes, okay, let's not let them get to second and six here. Let's stop the run. And then they come up with a play action, and they dial up something deep down the field.
And they're doing it well, too. Running up the middle, they're 5.78 yards per play up the middle, per run up the middle, third best in the NFL.
Yeah, so they got away from that last night for a little bit, and they can't forget who they are. I wrote at the end of my notes there, one of the last things I wrote is, I like what the Chiefs are doing, and Packers, don't forget what you do.
Sure.
And you're not, this is not, let's not revert to shotgun Aaron Rodgers carry us all over the field again. Let's not do that. You're at your best when you run the ball and stay balanced.
Can we go over to the Green Bay D and Chiefs, though?
We can.
Because here's the thing. I think 7-1 Packers, you look at it and be like, okay, Packers, elite team.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, there's some potential issues.
There's some issues.
There.
Yes.
What did you see on film from the Packers defense? Because here you're going against the Chiefs, though, and Andy Reid, yeah, okay, good, but no Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. And Matt Moore looked really good.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, it all stems with the Packers from their interior part of their defense. And I know you've heard me say this a little bit, but, hey, this is when you know, and this is the first line I wrote in my notes, signs when you know your interior D-line is no good is when you play a 2-4 defense, which is two down linemen, four linebackers, and one of those linebackers is playing three technique in the bare front. So they had Za'Darius Smith, who's 265 pounds, playing a position that usually a 310-pound man plays. Mm. But because the guy that they have there that's 295 or 300 pounds is no good, they just said, well, fuck it, he's no good, so let's put somebody else there, and he can't do much worse. So let's do that. They have issues there. That's where it all stems from. The interior, their linebackers, their D tackles, none of it is all that pretty right now. And it can put it puts their secondary in a little bit of a bind because they have to use those guys a little bit to get down in the run game and help and play more aggressive on that end.
Okay. But, I mean, Za'Darius Smith is handling it.
He is.
He's got eight on the year now. He's in that conversation for
phenomenal.
Top defensive players in the league
this year. He did phenomenal at three technique. It was Za'Darius, the guy they moved down. He did a really good job every time. One, because there's a little issue still with the left side of the offensive line for the Kansas City Chiefs with Irvin and the kid there, Rankins, they had, who they traded from with the Houston Texans to start the year. But, you know, I'll say this. I think there's some positives here for the Chiefs. Okay. First of all, Matt Moore did play well. There's no doubt about that. You know,
24 of 36,
yeah.
267 yards, two touchdowns for Matt Moore, a quarterback rating over 100.
Yeah, did a lot of good things. Like, I did not come away going, oh, my gosh, I mean, he missed a lot of throws, and if he would have hit these throws, they would have won the game.
I mean, it helps when Travis Kelce is wide open on that play, but it was like you said, a Patriots, you know, fake end-around pitch to Tyreek Hill, and then things open up.
Yeah, well, it's play design, and that's what they kind of did. I mean, the formula for the Chiefs was early on, especially when they kind of started driving the ball and got back to 14-14, it was run the ball, simple passes, and then what I call some Andy Reid specials, like that play there. Oh, yeah. Fake the toss, fake the reverse to Tyreek Hill, and now, you know, Travis Kelce gets like lost in the shuffle, like he's down blocking a part of the line of scrimmage, and he pops out the backside, and Matt Moore made a nice throw. But, you know, I think that was encouraging too. And I think it shows that the Chiefs can win games, you know, with more than like, oh, we got to be in Patrick Mahomes and shotgun and throw it 50 yards down the field every play. Some things that jumped out to me about the game, is like for all what the Chiefs do on run, you know, on offense, you know, running the football and getting the like two backs, one tight end and all that, you know, the one thing I think they might take away from the film is go, man, if we run the ball a little bit, there's this like whole little other offense we can tap into if we get a fullback and a tailback and Travis Kelce at the traditional tight end place and Tyreek Hill's on one side and Sammy Watkins is on the other. You know, what they lose sometimes is their ability to play the just like matchup football. Oh, we're running the ball. Oh, LeSean McCoy for five. You know what it does? All of a sudden, safety's down. Oh, now it's one-on-one with Hill and Watkins on the outside. And there was some plays where, yeah, you could throw some comebacks and some out routes to Tyreek Hill, which will lead to go routes and other things like that.
Do they need to break one of those runs, though, because their longest rush was 9 yards? I mean, do they still have to have that big play threat? Even if you are giving them 5 yards, if you don't have the potential for that big strike?
Yes. Yeah, well, you know, they need the potential of the big strike.
Yeah.
Would I have liked to see?
Which maybe you can get Tyreek Hill or
something. Well, yeah. And, you know, there was a few shots they took down the field where, like, Moore threw it into double coverage one time with Tyreek Hill down there. You know, could they have maybe found a few more ways to creatively throw the ball down the field? Sure. But, you know, I think Andy Reid did his best, and I think the Packers were very aware of where Tyreek Hill was, too. So he wasn't like – I never looked at the film and went, oh, man – you know, Matt Moore, if that was Patrick Mahomes, that was a touchdown.
Right.
No, they kind of played, you know, a little conservative or more conservative in the past game. It certainly wasn't aggressive down the field. But I do think it should open the eyes up for the Chiefs to go, man, we don't need to be in, you know, three wide receivers, shotgun every play. We can do some other things to create some big plays.
Packers, the defense will be the issue, giving up 6 yards per play, 23rd in the NFL. Where they have excelled, though,
yeah,
Chris, is in the red zone.
Yeah, they don't let you score touchdowns.
Giving up a touchdown just 50% of the time. That's 8th best in the NFL.
Yep.
And on offense, where they have the 5th time of possession in the NFL.
There you go. Well, that's a good formula. You know, that's showing you. So you're not scoring touchdowns. You know, they're eating up clock. And then, of course, with Aaron Rodgers, they usually are scoring touchdowns once they start to sniff the red zone in general. The biggest play and the biggest moment of the game, we got to, like, before we move on.
Yep.
Hey, this game is going to be a shootout. The Chiefs are in the position of power, and LeSean McCoy fumbles.
Yeah.
And that really kind of swung the momentum and the power of the game back into the Packers' favor. But at that point, they were on their heels and in trouble. You know, but he fumbles, and they have a 5-play, 27-yard drive, touchdown, and they were kind of in control from that point on.
All right, is that it?
Yeah,
is
I think
there anything
so.
Anything else to get into?
Oh, yeah, the only thing I will say, I think the Packers need to adopt the New England way, okay, on defense. Your D-line ain't going to get it done, so just get over it. Put in linebackers, you know, just like I talked about with the Chiefs for a few weeks. Like, you can't have a quick strike offense and a slow-death defense. With the Packers, you know, they're erring a little bit on, like, oh, we're doing this and we're being sound. Okay, yeah, great, you're being sound, but they're still running for 5 yards up the middle every time they run it. Or they're still moving the ball. I would like to see them throw out more of their linebackers all in the – do the Patriots thing. Linebackers everywhere, standing up. They have the secondary to match up with guys, and Pettin's creative where he has creative zone blitz coverages. I think they can play that a little bit where they put – Fackrell and Blake Martinez and Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith and Rashawn Gary all on the field together and do some creative things up front, I don't think the results will be any worse than in the run game especially.
Yeah.
And maybe you confuse some people and create some more plays that way too.
That's it.
Okay.
All right. Take these. I don't know why I do that.
There was no, like, I think from either one of those games, like, schematical, like, where I just, other than, like, Shanahan's schematics, I think, were special. The rest of these games kind of played out to way I expected or thought they did on TV.
Okay, we're going to go through the final games, but we're going to do it a little bit of mix of headlines and the newest favorite song that I have, the biggest
sensation. You don't listen to music, so.
This is not by Dr. Dre.
No.
This is, damn,
by
okay.
Dr. Chris Sims.
Damn. I'm okay. Damn. I'm okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes.
I'm okay.
The legal gambolizing.
Oh, baby. I am Chris Sims. I'm okay. Damn. Okay.
Illegal gambolizing.
Hey, legal gambolizing. You better be
soon
careful.
Soon to be legal gambolizing everywhere.
Yep.
That's coming.
That's coming. That's right.
Can I give you a damn okay?
Of course.
How about... I think we've done it before, and you're not totally on the Gardner Minshew train yet.
No, but yesterday deserves it.
A damn okay.
Yes, it does.
Came back, bounced back, and there were a couple times where he was very Aaron Rodgers-esque.
That's why it deserves it. You're right. I mean, yeah, we were giving him damn okays because he was handing the ball off the middle to Leonard Fournette. It was when we were like, man, Minshew gives a hell of a handoff.
Good strategy.
Yesterday was legit. He made some big-time plays.
So there was a 70-yard touchdown to Chris Conley.
Right.
Where the jet safety, Jamal Adams, if you look at the play, should have had his first sack of the year. He was sent on a blitz.
Yeah.
Leonard Fournette just basically whiffs.
Right.
But Minshew was able to get around him, elude. And then you have that play late in the game where he throws it right in between two defensive players and finds, I forget who it was in the Chark in
DJ
the end zone.
DJ Charky, Chark.
So it was above and beyond.
Yes.
for Gardner Minshew. And so it's, I mean, it's interesting. He was the 10th of 11 quarterbacks taken in the draft mm-hmm. this past year. And it does go to show you, and I was kind of thinking about the Daniel Jones situation where, right. you know, Daniel Jones is a good quarterback and a talented quarterback, but the I think the idea of the mistake taking him that high is that there were opportunities to get a Jarrett Stidham in the fourth round, a Drew Lock in the second round, obviously a Gardner Minshew in the sixth round. We didn't know how they'd turn out, but there are some opportunities to get these guys that might have equal value to Daniel Jones 5 years from now.
Yeah, well, maybe. I would say still no to that. I think Daniel Jones still has a higher end ceiling than all those guys you mentioned there, sure. definitely. And listen, I know I was one of the guys that was questioning Daniel Jones, but I've seen enough now that I'm not questioning a whole lot. But you to your point, I mean, Gardner's got like some starting quarterback traits to his game. You know, he is smart. He is a consistent thrower of the football. Is his arm big time? No, but it's still a good arm. And then the last piece of the puzzle, and I think what you're referring to is when shit breaks down or the offensive coordinator doesn't call a play where somebody's open and the defensive coordinator won the play,
right.
he's capable of still making it look like the offense won the play. And that, to me, is a big part of evaluating the quarterback. I mean, hey, anybody can hit the 10-yard curl that's wide open. I mean, I'm not going to go, oh, my gosh, if we didn't have that quarterback to throw the 10-yard curl, yeah. we would be screwed as a football organization. I mean, that I don't put a lot of credit into that. But when the 10-yard curl is not open and then reads 2, 3, and 4 aren't open, what do you do off of that? That is a big, like, thing I evaluate at the quarterback position.
If you're the head coach who's quarterbacking the last few games of the regular season, once Nick Foles is back healthy, who's the quarterback?
It's a tough decision. I think I would go back to Nick Foles.
Why?
I do. I just think Nick Foles, for the point of the year you're about to be in, he's a little more proven. He is definitely a little more battle-tested with we're getting into playoff-type football and things like that. Yes, I think I would go with him, but either way, you have a guy like Gardner Minshew who is going to be an asset to your football team for the next few years.
This is his time. This is yeah. what he does.
Yeah,
he comes
so you,
in this part of the year.
You would roll with him, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
It's a tough call. I don't know if I'm right. I'm just saying.
You have a positive. You have yeah. Gardner Minshew who stepped up, and Nick Foles comes in, and he's proven he can do it late in the year, and so we'll see if he can do it again.
Yeah. The big thing is politics of football will come into that decision.
Got a headline for Texans.
Because they're not going to want to have the guy that's making $20-something million dollars a year sitting on the bench.
100%. So that's and there's bit, ways that's to issue. Walk away from these contracts, but not
yet.
Free always,
right.
and yet
right.
not yet, probably.
Right. Right.
Texans and Raiders. Texans get the win. My headline for that one, though, if we go to headlines, Watt now. Just too unfortunate that J.J. Watt lost for the season once again. Deshaun Watson was great, but my concern with the Texans and looking at the numbers is that even with them, they had the 21st defense in yards per play, 28th in passing yards given up,
yes,
24th in sack rate. So right. even with J.J. Watt, that defense was not
good. Not good. No, I know. The only thing they're good at is stopping the run. Other than that, this is the big concern with the Houston Texans. There was a game yesterday again, you know, there was like really no points where I felt like they were going to stop the Oakland Raiders. You know, finally got a field goal stop towards the end of the game that made it 24-20 to where then it allowed Deshaun Watson to go down on one more big drive and make some miracles happen. I mean, Deshaun Watson is just a phenomenal football player. The Raiders, though, I think the Raiders are heading in the right direction.
They do look good.
Their offense is, of course, really well coached with Gruden. He's got the right formula there and everything he's doing. But I picked the Texans to win this game, and I know I picked a close game, and I can't remember what I picked because, you know, I thought that the Raiders would move the ball on them. Like you said, there's not a lot of difference makers on that Houston defense, and people are scot-free in the passing game way too much. But I think the biggest thing is Deshaun Watson. When he plays a team like the Raiders who don't have difference makers on their side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball, you know, like last week we saw with the Raiders, quarterbacks like Watson and Rodgers, they can single-handedly take over games against defenses like the Oakland Raiders yeah. because they don't have great pass rushers, linebackers, nothing special. You know, a lot of good in the secondary, but nothing great. And those tend to be like those type of quarterbacks, Mahomes, Watson, Russell Wilson. Those are the kind of teams they can just physically win with their great ability.
Every team in this division got a win. Texans get a win. Colts get a win. They beat the Broncos 15-13. Another close loss for the Broncos. My headline for that is catching flack. So Joe Flacco said, we're now a 2-6 football team and we're afraid to go for it in the two-minute drill. Just feels like we're kind of afraid to lose a game. Why can't we be aggressive in some of these situations? It almost seemed like he thought he was talking to Vic Fangio, but he was actually talking to the media at that time. So they had the ball. They had the lead by a point.
Yeah.
And they had, what, it was like a 4th-and-3? And
yeah, I thought it was even
4th-and-5.
4th-and-5, yeah.
From the Colts, 43 with 1:55 left.
Right.
It's like we're sitting here at 2-5. Let's go for it. I agree with him.
I get it. I mean, I do. Like, you want to be aggressive. Yeah, you got nothing to lose. But his defense had played phenomenal. Okay. And they were going to punt it. They punted them deep down there. They had almost had a safety on the first play of the drive. I mean, if Von Miller tackles Jacoby Brissett, it's going to be a safety and the game is going to be over.
Right.
I mean, that's going to be it. But Jacoby Brissett breaks the tackle and throws a laser down the sidelines and makes a big play like that. You know, I don't understand Joe Flacco coming out and saying all this stuff publicly. I don't. You know, part of the reason they didn't go for it on 4th-and-5 is because they don't trust you or the offense.
I mean, that is true.
So that's like, you got to take that into account.
And now he's hurt. We got breaking news, herniated disc for Joe Flacco.
Well, he was holding his neck. I saw the play that happened, and he kind of scrambled, and somebody hit him on like the neck or head, and the whole game he was on the sideline, had people working him. So he's out?
He's out.
So
the Drew Lock era?
So we'll see the Drew Lock era start here.
Well, no, it is not going to be Drew Lock.
Wow,
apparently.
So he's still not ready to go either.
Brandon Allen.
The Brandon Allen show. All
the Brandon Allen era.
That's what we wanted to see. That's why we tune into the Broncos, the Brandon Allen era.
Colts get a win. They were not impressive.
They were not impressive. That's one Wednesday deep dive. I'm gonna go back and find out what I would like to know. Listen, I know the Broncos defense is really good. I was shocked that the Colts got kind of stymied the way they did. And then Vinatieri with the clutch field goal. I mean, come on. That's unbelievable. Misses an extra point, misses a field goal, and still makes a 51-yarder.
Steps up when he needs to. As long as we're doing breaking news, might as well do the other real quick breaking news.
Yeah.
Jets traded their defensive lineman Leonard Williams to the Giants for a 3rd-round pick this year and a 5th-round pick next year.
Wow.
Your quick thought?
Well, I'm a little surprised, okay, from really the standpoint of the Jets. I mean, they just don't have a lot of blue-chip players on that side of the ball. And, hey, maybe Leonard Williams is still really good for my money.
You don't know why the Jets wouldn't give him up?
Well, I think ultimately what they're doing is he's in the 5th year. They're probably afraid he's going to ask for big money, and maybe they just don't feel like he fits for the future plans of the organization. He's not one of their guys, whatever it may be. I get the Giants wanting him. I mean, Gettleman's showing he wants big people. You know, he's in a division with the Eagles and the Cowboys and the Redskins, who all have really good, big, overpowering offensive lines. This gives him more versatility. Leonard Williams is kind of a DN/D-tackle type. The Giants, I mean, you give up a 3rd-and-5, you're going to be probably signing him to some sort of either franchising him or signing him to some sort of long-term contract when the year's over, I would expect. But I am surprised to see the Jets let him go.
It's the first trade ever between the Giants and the
Jets. I was going to say, I can't remember one.
Never happened before.
No.
First one, Leonard Williams, that trivia answer. Also, another trade?
Yeah.
Miami traded the running back Kenyon Drake to the Cardinals for a 6th-round pick.
Yeah.
They got David Johnson with an injury.
Right.
Chase Edmonds, who left the game last week.
Yep. So this was a rumored one that this could possibly happen. There was some interest there. He certainly is going to fit what the Cardinals want to do on the offensive side of the ball. You know, he is more of a spread type of running back. He's had a fumbling issue. I think that's really where he's kind of probably lost his trust with the Dolphins organization. You know, whether it's fumbles or, you know, drop pass when they had the 2-point conversion against the Redskins a few weeks ago. But certainly a piece of an offense that the Cardinals need, and I understand them making that move.
The trade deadline is Tuesday. I'm going to give you 3 names. Who do you think goes? Who do you think stays?
Ooh.
A.J. Green, wide receiver, Cincinnati. Chris Harris Jr., corner, Denver. Washington left tackle, Trent Williams. Who stays? Who goes? Who gets traded?
Chris Harris Jr.
gets traded.
I think he will get traded.
Okay.
Yes.
AJ Green.
Gosh, you know I want it to happen so badly, but I don't think that'll happen.
They don't seem motivated to want to do it.
And I think, you know, I'm sure Zach Taylor's in their ear of like, hey, listen, I want to coach the offense here for a few more years, and I'd like to like have a a star receiver to be a part of the show.
And
here.
What's his value too? They might not be able to get back great value.
Maybe
for
not
him,
to what they totally what they want. Yeah, because he is due for a new contract. He is at that age where, you know, teams are going to try to say, oh, well, he's starting to hit the decline and all of those
he's
issues.
Been hurt quite a bit the last couple of years.
And I mean, Redskins are just too stupid to trade Trent Williams, so I don't think that'll happen either.
Two more games.
Yeah.
I want to give to Mike Evans, 11 catches, 198 yards, two touchdowns in a loss.
Yeah, I mean,
to the Titans.
One of the best receivers in football that we don't really ever get to talk about because they just lose.
And we've been talking a lot about Chris Godwin, about him and Jameis. So, the Bucs, four turnovers. They were all from Jameis Winston, two fumbles, two interceptions. I think it's time to turn a new leaf. I think we're almost there for the Buccaneers.
Yes, it seems, you know, like it's going down the inevitable path. You know, the Buccaneers were that was there to be had yesterday. They could have won the game.
That fumble that was
blown down. Yeah, the fumble that's blown dead. I mean, and again, you know, a little like we talked to Giants, where the Giants just got in the game and they're like, oh damn, we're down 14-0. We just got warmed up. I just broke a sweat. You know, same thing for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They go down, they get an early field goal, then, you know, they. What do I want to say here? I just want to make sure I get this right. They snap the ball off of, what, Jameis's face, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that becomes a fumble.
Right.
Tennessee scores, what, the next play to make it 7-3. And then they come back, Tampa Bay, once again, they got the ball, and I believe that's when he throws the interception. Am I correct or no? I'm not. This is where they just want to make sure I get this. So he threw the interception in the next drive after that. Tennessee didn't drive the ball. They kick it back to them. But they got down 14-3 early on in the game, and they had to try to dig themselves out of a hole there, and it just wasn't easy.
So the Titans win. Anything on the Titans?
The Titans are
four now.
I don't think they're a playoff team, but they're going to like ruin a lot of playoff dreams for teams as they go along. They're better with Tannehill. I feel like we're starting to see a semblance of a run game there yesterday. Derrick Henry, I thought, had a number of runs and a few that I think got called back. And the big thing that's going to be a pain in the ass with them, you know, they're New England-ish. They have a secondary that can play man, and then they can do a lot of crazy shit with their front seven. So they're going to be annoying. I just don't think they're going to make it to the playoffs. I think they'll be one of those teams that's just on the outside looking in.
Here's the question. Two other teams, our final game, Eagles and Bills.
Damn, we didn't even hit this one. I forgot about
this.
Can you
believe that? We saved the best for last. The Eagles were not looking like a playoff team when they lost to Dallas 37-10 last week. Come back, and they beat up on a really good Bills team, giving them their second loss of the year, 31-13. When asked about it after the game, Lane Johnson said, 4-4 looks like we're average. So they have they see there's still work to do, but it was good. If you're going to give a damn okay in this game, Miles Sanders, 65-yard touchdown.
Definitely. I mean, or just the Eagles' run game in general.
Sure.
I've been kind of pounding the table. Can the Eagles and Carson Wentz get underneath the center? Can they run the ball downhill again? You know, they got one of the most like big, powerful offensive lines in football, and they don't do it. So I saw that yesterday once again. I like that. You know, the defense, it just showed them having a little like Ronald Darby back and a Sidney Jones, you know, back out of corner and all that, a little more health in the secondary. Still not totally healthy, but it does make a difference for them. You know, Darby had the big pass breakup at the end. But the big thing is, again, you know, game-changing moment where the game is, what was it, 7-3? The Bills are in control. And it's a 3rd and 3, and they call a quarterback design sweep to the right, and Josh Allen fumbles, and the game was really never the same. The Eagles scored a few plays later. Dallas got a touchdown. They go for two. It's 11-7, and they kind of controlled the game from that point on. And those are just the little things that if Buffalo wants to be taken real seriously and be like a team that can maybe go to the AFC Championship game and play the Patriots, they got to kind of stop the self-inflicted wounds too. Josh Allen is... You just still got some of that young Brett Favre in him where there's no play he can't make. And I'm a little surprised they moved the ball like that on the Bills' defense, who's been awesome.
Yeah, I mean, 31 points against them. Jordan Howard had a good game, too. 96 yards with 23 carries.
I'm being hazed.
What'd you hit?
HR has it on film. I'm suing NBC for $7 million. My left shoulder blade hurts now.
It threw it off. Yeah. Yes. Led
Sunday ball. Night, $7 million by Chris Sims.
That's every game.
That's it.
We got we through all it. The games. But I do want to say we talked about the Mike Tirico podcast.
Oh, yes.
Josh Norris.
Josh Norris and the Roto World Football Podcast. All those jamokes over there. They're all
it.
Over their stuff on fantasy football.
And despite listening to it, my teams are terrible.
Yeah, are they?
Yeah, I had David Johnson in one league.
That's okay, not good. Well, that
it's not
hurts,
going great.
Right?
And
what's your record right now in your
3-5?
3-5,
both leagues. Yeah,
jeez,
it's
you
embarrassing.
Suck. Yep,
it's
you suck. You're like the Miami Dolphins of fantasy football.
No, not that. Not quite that.
No, what are you? Give me what? Who are
I'm
you?
Like the Buccaneers.
You're the Buccaneers.
There's
okay.
some flashes.
Okay, Jameis. Okay, Jameis. Sure. But yes, the Roto World Football Podcast. Anybody who's interested in fantasy. Or really just listen to football and how guys are getting used. I mean, they're going to steer you in the right way, always. I mean, the whole crew is extremely knowledgeable. I know I've said that a lot. And I actually have gotten getting less, like, text messages about fantasy this year.
People are just listening to the podcast.
I hope so. I hope so. That's what I kept saying. Like,
you directed
don't
them
text
over there.
Me. Listen to them.
I'll give
and,
you Josh's
hopefully
phone number
that's working.
And you can text him.
Yeah. Steelers are going to win tonight.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it'll be a blowout. I'm going to say Miami hangs around. I don't know my exact score, so I want to get to my exact score, okay?
That you gave on the air?
Yep, I got it right here. I'm going to beat you to it. Here we go. It is nope.
Oh, a lot of notes this week.
Well,
wow.
You know it. I got Dolphins 21 or Steelers 21, Dolphins 13. I think it'll be that type of game. I think Brian Flores' defense will give be a pain in the butt for the Steelers, but the Steelers win the game nonetheless.
I don't even know what the line is on the game, but
yeah.
Minus 14.5. So you
ooh,
think
that's a lot.
Think the,
but I wouldn't bet on team. don't bet on bad teams.
Yeah, right? Don't get money involved.
That game could be 21-13 with 4 seconds left, and Ryan Fitzpatrick will throw 2 pick-sixes and you'll lose. I mean, he's capable. So don't do it. Don't all bet right. on bad teams. All right, you're the man.
That was it.
We're done.
Well done.
Yep. All right, everybody. That's it for Chris Sims Unbuttoned. Wednesday, we'll do the What the Fuck Happened podcast. Big Fucker will be on the show as well. We'll deep dive into some more film. Hope everybody enjoyed this. Be good. Enjoy Monday Night Football. Talk to you Wednesday. Peace. Yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.